Chapter 4. Guided by the best navigators in the fleet, the warships of the Imperial Army broke warp on the far side of Yarant's star, partially masked by its incandescence. Despite such precautions, their entry was not flawless. Alerted to their arrival, if not sure of their numbers and purpose, the orbiting flotillas of assembled traitor warships divided. Some continued their close support of the battle on the surface of Yarant 3, but the greater part broke away to investigate the newly arrived threat. The incoming battleships and cruiser seemed undeterred by the size of the fleet moving across the system to confront them. Passing the stellar boundary, they made battle lines in preparation to meet the renegade ships bearing down upon them. Perhaps, believing the Therians and Natolians desperate or insane, the traitors managed their own formations to encircle the arriving warships. The two forces powered towards the inevitable contact, gun decks ready, shields crackling. Committed, there was nothing that the traitors could do when Korax ordered the ships of the Raven Guard to deactivate their reflex shields. Each battle barge, cruiser, and frigate was tethered to a Therian warship. Towed through the warp, each had crossed the translation boundary into Yarant at the exact same moment as its twin, invisible to all detection, even the senses of librarians and navigators. The Legion ships had just enough time to detach their docking claws and power away from their surrogates, redirecting the output of their energy defenses to banks of void shields. Torpedoes from the two clashing fleets filled the void. While the traitors emptied their flight bays of gunships and interceptors, the Loyalists continued to accelerate, keeping close behind a wave of lethal ordnance. The Raven Guard and Auxilia had a single, simple objective: break through to the orbit of Yarant 3. Their attack lacked finesse, but it did not need any. The ships of Horus's followers burned retro thrusters and maneuvered hard to come to new headings, but it was too late to counter the single hammer blow directed at the heart of the traitor fleet. Though outgunned across the system, Bran's genius ploy had brought the Raven Guard and their allies against just a third of the enemy. As the lead Alpha Legion ships parted to avoid the concentrated wave of torpedoes directed at them, the warships of Korax pounced, catching them in lethal crossfires. Ship after ship passed through the center of the splitting traitors. Bombardment cannons and broadsides hurled the last of their munitions, spitting plasma and las in constant salvos. While the traitors scrambled to recover some semblance of order, grand cruisers burned and battle barges broke from stern to prow under the incessant attacks. On the bridge of the Avenger, Bran cheered. He could not control himself, so pleased was he that the plan had actually worked. He gave no thought to the fact that Korax had specified that the strategy only needed to get them to Yarant. No consideration had been given to how they would leave the system. The Avenger formed the point of the attack alongside the battle barges Providence and Shadowed Guardian, commanded by Agapito and Sukunu, respectively. The drop pod cascades and flight bays filled to capacity from the rest of the fleet, ready to dispatch the Raptors and Black Guard down to the surface in a single, devastating drop. "Well done, Commander," Korax said quietly, standing just to one side of Bran. The Primarch had been so taciturn of late, so withdrawn, those three simple words were as much a cause for celebration as the success of his plan. Giving no thought to return fire, their void shields flaring from the cannonades of their foes, the Raven Guard pressed on towards the battle on Yarant 3. The Natolians and Therians turned, magazines still full from recent supply, gun crews at full capacity. The warships formed up to protect the Legion of Korax, creating a barrier of torpedoes, fighter bombers, and ships of the line to dissuade the traitors from pursuit. Squadrons of destroyers and frigates hunted down crippled enemy ships many times their size and finished them with blasts from lance turrets and mass driver batteries. Having been driven from orbit by the traitors, the scattered remnants of the Space Wolves fleet converged from the outer system too. Guessing Korax's intent, they seized upon the arrival of the Raven Guard and headed back towards the contested world. Faced with approaching foes from opposite directions, the ships still at high anchorage faced an impossible choice: abandon their watch over the planet, or be trapped between two vengeful fleets. Their commanders chose the worst of both, dividing their forces. Many Alpha Legion ships and those of the Thousand Suns chose to withdraw before they were trapped, trying to fight within the gravity well of the planet. The World Eaters universally opted to fight, supported by a few remaining Alpha Legion cruisers and vassal ships from the Imperial Army. Their resistance did not last long. As the Avenger closed towards high orbit, Korax immediately recognized the voice that hailed from one of the approaching Space Wolf squadrons. "Captain Raffin, I am pleased that you managed to make your delivery," the Primarch replied. "I am sorry to say that it didn't help, but that is another conversation, Raven Lord, for another time. How goes the battle? Have you received reports from your High Command?" "Nothing but scraps. I hope it is because my brothers are more intent on waging war than sending communications." "I have to locate my brother. Early scans show fighting across a large battlefront. Where on Yarrant is Leman Russ located?" "I don't know, Raven Lord, but finding him shouldn't be difficult."
"How so, Captain?"
"Look for the greatest number of foes, the biggest battle. He'll be somewhere close to the middle of it." The pulse of anti-aircraft fire lit the skies. Flickers of blue and green gleamed from bleached bones. The skeletons of vast beasts littered the red dunes for many kilometers. Huge rib cages and vertebrae jutted like the wreckage of war machines. Phalangeal outcrops and femur-propped hills shaped the ruddy sands, breaks against the gentle but constant wind that blew from dark, frothing seas to the south. Had the hab-block-sized monsters been wiped out by some cataclysm, or had they been drawn to the Karadec Valley on some deathly migration over centuries in times past? It was an idle interest that distracted Corin as he waited for the next opportunity to move. The Moor Dathan crouched in the lee of a thigh-bone that rose twice his height from a sand drift and extended much further underground, it seemed. In this sandy nook he waited, counting the seconds until the closest laser cannon paused for its recharge cycle. It used to be that the Shadow Masters had hunted in squads, using their unique Korax-gifted abilities to sow discord and terror amongst their foes. Now they worked alone, their number reduced to a handful amongst all the legionaries of the Raven Guard. The Skyhammer gun emplacement, just a dozen meters ahead, fell quiet. Soundlessly, Corin rose from his position, sliding over the dunes like a desert serpent. He seemed to flicker, like the shadows cast by the more distant gun batteries, as though jumping from one shadow directly to the next. He was within pistol range of the crew in a few seconds, but the weapon remained at his belt, his forearm-mounted blades dull for the time being. They were not his target. The next salvo of fire lasted 30 seconds, a blind fusillade trying to catch the whisper cutters and shadow hawks circling unseen above. With a loud whine, the gun powered down again. The crew, three Imperial Army soldiers, complained quietly about the weather while they blew on their hands in the chill night. By the time the cannon opened fire once more, Corin was well past the boundary and heading towards his objective. He moved quickly now, inside the cordon of vehicles and patrols guarding the headquarters of one of the World Eaters' commanders. Elsewhere, along the battlefront, other Moor Dathan would be infiltrating the traitor lines in a similar manner. The World Eaters' command center had been easy enough to find. Ciphers and codes were poor defense against the Raven Guard. The confusion caused by their attack had elicited a storm of traffic broadcast on many media and a flurry of messengers, gunship flights, and other activity. Isolating the node points of such bursts identified the crucial elements in the enemy command network as easily as if they had erected flags to announce their presence. In the case of this particular commander, he had hung flags. Two Legion banners hung from crosspoles mounted on the backs of a pair of Spartan heavy transports that were parked close to the prefabricated drop bunker he used as his command center. Corin found a spot in which to nestle that hid him from all angles except the bunker. He adjusted the auto-senses of his specialist warplate, dropping down all the readings except audio, which intensified to bring the myriad sounds of the desert alive. The Shadow Master existed in pure soundscape for several seconds. Even the hiss of the wind over the sand shaped his picture of the environment. It was simple enough to filter out the extraneous noises to focus on human sounds. He heard the world-eaters talking. Much he could not understand, either a local argo of their legion or an artificial battle cant devised for secrecy. It made no difference, as he heard a word over again and again. Delarax, the name of the lieutenant commander. He was definitely in the bunker. Corin slid closer to the outpost, his stripped-down armor making no more noise than the desultory snap of the flags and the hum of the Spartans' batteries. There was no guard set at the door, though two legionaries manned the roof guns. Corin was already beneath the closest, the shield of his autocannon blocking his sight to the Shadow Master. Almost within touching distance of the bunker wall, Corin pulled a coin-sized beacon from his belt and tossed it to the base of the ferrocrete structure. He withdrew quickly, lest by chance some enemy legionary happened to spot the low-spectrum signal pulsing from the beacon. 20 seconds later, he was 100 meters away, concealed amidst the great bony landscape. A spark appeared in the blackness, a blue dot that rapidly expanded into the plume of a missile engine. Sirens wailed across the traitor camp. Anti-air turrets whined, but they were not quick enough. Corin smiled and tracked the executor missile right until the moment it struck the base of the bunker. Like the Cestus assault rams used to breach fortifications, the executor was tipped with a melter detonator that seared through 2 meters of ferrocrete in an instant. The gleaming core of the projectile disappeared into the foundations. Half a second later, the wall of the structure exploded, turned to fragments and particles carried aloft by an expanding plasma cloud. It was not enough to destroy the headquarters, nor was it intended to be. The walls had gone, though, the roof partially collapsed, leaving a 5-meter hole open to the elements. Overhead, a whisper cutter glided noiselessly into the glow of the missile strike. Armored figures along its length dropped away to fall groundwards, a dark fury squad dedicated to assassination missions. Their jump packs whined into life just moments before they hit the ground, heard only by Corin among the shouts of dismay and confusion that had erupted from the remains of the bunker. The shimmer of lightning claws broke the shadows. Sergeant Gelt, the chooser of the slain, led his dark furies into the ruddy light of the headquarters interior, and their claws crackled into deadly life, cerulean sparks reflecting from the plasma-smoothed edge of the crater. Corin's mission was accomplished, and he drew back into the darkness. When he was half a kilometer away, he signaled the Darkwing gunship from which Commander Agapito coordinated the decapitation attacks.
Target 4 Alpha eliminated, he reported.
Affirmative, Wraith 4. Await whispercutter transportation to next target. The traitors lost a dozen command-level officers. Augurs and voxcasts were met with static as the fleet of Raven Guard ships above Yarrant 3 employed their shadowcast strategy and blanketed all channels and wavelengths with fluctuating barrages of energy and traffic, making it impossible for anyone to communicate or scan for more than a kilometer. The Raven Guard needed no such communications, for they had been carefully briefed and, down to individual squads, knew their specific role in the battle to come. As the terminus of Dawn crossed the battle line where the traitors continued their attack against the beleaguered Space Wolves, Korax led the main assault. More Dathan and Dark Fury squads already on the surface attacked behind the enemy formations, picking objectives of opportunity to waylay or destroy. Under the cover of these fresh attacks, dozens of Stormbirds, Thunderhawks, Shadowhawks, and Darkwings fell from orbit, unpowered for the first few kilometers, invisible to all augurs. When their jets finally burned into life, they swept out from the glare of the rising sun, vague silhouettes against the glaring pale blue orb of Yarrant's star. Missiles, rockets, and las cannons announced their arrival. The fire of detonations raked through traitor squads and battle tanks massed for the next attack against Lehman Russ's legion. Agapito was on a dark wing in the first wave, leaping from the gunship with his command squad before it even touched down. The impact of his landing did not shock him, but the scene that greeted him gave him pause for a moment. The hillside was littered with hundreds of dead, in the livery of the Space Wolves and their enemies. Traitor guns pounded out a thunderous beat from the nearby batteries. The tangled remains of legionaries seemed to grasp at Agapito's feet, causing him to stumble, and dead eyes stared accusingly at him from broken helms. In his mind, he was back at the Urgal Depression, surrounded on all sides. He fired indiscriminately, shooting any figure that was not black-clad. There was no shortage of foes to target. Heavy weapons fire screamed and whined past him, lighting the battlefield with more explosions. And like Istvan, Korax was there. The Primarch stood on the ramp of a descending Stormbird, his claws bright against the gloomy interior, an ornate pistol in his fist. He stepped away from the gunship into the rushing wind, his wings snapping out a second later. Korax soared down through the smoke and flames. Fire-raptor attack craft flanked the swooping Primarch, their guns leaving trails of dead legionaries with their passing. Unlike on that day when the civil war had begun for the Raven Guard, there was none to match Korax. No Lorgar or Nighthaunter to stall his vengeance. Lightning strikes erupted from his claws as he landed, sweeping limbs and heads from the legionaries that swarmed towards him. His wings lashed out, their razor edges splitting traitorous bodies, eviscerating with each sweep of an ebon pinion. "On!" roared Agapito, reloading his bolter. "Into them!" The falcons, talons, blackguard, and raptor smooths surged into the enemy, racing over the bodies of dead space wolves and traitors. Already destabilized by the attacks on their commanders, a fresh and vengeful foe in their midst, such officers as remained amongst the Thousand Suns, Alpha Legion, and World Eaters ordered a retreat. They had the advantage of numbers, of guns, and tanks. There was no need to be drawn into a futile melee against a raging Primarch. Agapito urged on his warriors, desperate to pursue. He knew that the enemy would rally and sweep all before them, given time. Korax had another perspective. The Primarch ordered his legion to hold, to secure the withdrawal of the last Space Wolves, and it was with a knot of anguish in his gut that Agapito complied and brought his company to a halt. Gunships continued to harry the retreating traitors, but soon they had moved into range of their anti-air guns, and the Raven Guard aircraft were forced to break off. It was then that the orbital barrage commenced, and fire rained from the heavens, driving the traitors even further back, splitting their armies, making them seek whatever shelter they could find. The ship attack continued until midday, when Korax ordered the fleet to conserve what ammunition remained to support the final attack. Caked in dried blood, his claws still sheathed with flares of lightning, the Primarch strode the ruin of the enemy army, seeking any Fenrisians that might still live, guiding the apothecaries to the wounded. In time, he called his commanders to conference while the squads created a perimeter across the hillsides.
"Russ is not here," the Primarch said, perplexed.
"Is he dead already?" asked Bran. "Are we too late?" Korax said nothing to this, keeping his thoughts guarded. He turned and scoured the hills with dark eyes, then pointed to one of the distant mountain slopes.
"There," he declared. "Two hearthships of Fenris guard a fortress. There we will find the Wolf King. Lift the shadow cast and hail our friends. I would let my brother know he does not fight alone."
"The enemy are not broken, my lord," said Agapito. "They'll come again."
"Yes, they will," replied the Primarch. "But we have a few hours. We will use them wisely."
"I am Bjorn," said the warrior that came forth to meet Korax. Squads of space wolves had assembled quickly across the battlefield, barring the route to the Fenrisian hearth ships.
"You are one of the wolf lords, Bjorn?" asked Korax when the legionary motioned for the Primarch to follow him towards the headquarters.
"No, not a wolf lord,"
Bjorn's expression darkened.
"But the others, the wolf lords, think I have a weird upon me. My path has crossed the Wolf King's too many times for it to be chance, so the rune priests say."
"Weird? I do not recognize this term."
"A fate, you might call it, or a curse. A gyas, for good or ill, entwined with a path walked by the Lord of Winter and War. A talisman, they hope."
The Space Wolves formed a rough guard of honor around Korax and his commanders as they marched on the makeshift headquarters of the 6th Legion. Columns of tanks and warriors were withdrawing, many thousands of Space Wolves converging from across the mountain and valley. The din of battle continued to reverberate along the slopes from further afield as more distant companies carried on the fight.
"Where is your Primarch?" Korax asked, seeing no sign of his brother amongst the returning squads. I would speak with Leman Russ. Bjorn looked uneasy at this proposition and nodded towards the two gull-winged orbital landers. You should come with me. The Wolf Lords left to hold conference on the defense of their last bastion on Yarrant. Bjorn and other guards stood just outside the chamber, reluctantly allowing the master of the Raven Guard some privacy with his stricken brother. Korax glanced towards the door, assuring himself that he would not be overheard. Like his ability to pass unseen, he could mask his words from notice or recollection. Thinking about these traits made him even more uncomfortable.
It was a mistake, he whispered, still kneeling with the Wolf King cradled close to his chest. We were a mistake, brother. I know that now. I see it for myself, in my own blundering. I see it in the eyes of the mistakes I created, just as surely as the Emperor sees it in ours. There is no sense of guilt, only good intentions gone bad. But this was not meant to be. We were not meant to be. The universe is correcting itself, expunging the infection. How could I have been blind to it for so long? Pride? Arrogance, perhaps. To think we were better, stronger, special. Horus is only following his true nature. Have we simply been denying ours?
Memories crowded into his thoughts, jostling for attention, each of them carrying a message so obvious in hindsight. He let out a long, rattling breath and laid his brother carefully back upon the makeshift bier. Then he stood, keeping his voice almost inaudible.
We have been touched by forces beyond the Emperor's own design. You know this, brother, as well as I do. No good comes from that which in evil is born, no matter the purpose or cause. I look at Kurz and see myself. Do you find Angron in your reflection? How thin is the veneer that keeps us loyal, keeps us civilized. But for chance, it seems, any of us might now have crossed that line. Does the line even exist, or do we simply draw it in front of us as suits our own vanity?
He recalled words spat at him from the lips of a dying sorcerer on the Atlas City platform. Yes, a sorcerer. Not a psyker, not a thing of science and reason, but a wielder of the arcane, the supernatural. Such things existed, even if the Emperor would deny them.
How could the Emperor create such demigods with science alone? Warriors that can withstand tank shells, leaders whose every word must be obeyed, creatures with powers far beyond any Thunder Warrior or Legionary. Why do you think the Emperor decided not to simply recreate his children when they were lost? What unique gifts of darkness did he pass to you?
I used to think there was righteous justice, he continued, his gaze moving from Russ to the warriors at the doorway. That whatever I did, it served humanity. There is only one way left to aid mankind, and it does not include our survival, O King of Wolves. This is not our universe, and it never was. You cannot create legends and myths in a laboratory.
Other faces were in his memory, vying for attention, demanding that their messages be remembered. Nathian, the bolt shell destroying his skull, a self-inflicted end to the turmoil. How had he known? How had Nathian seen what Korax had not?
You often spoke of the Fenrisian notion of a good death, said the Raven Guard. If there is such a thing, I desire it. I should have taken it on Istvan. Time and again, fate presented me with opportunity, but I denied it. Against Kurz and Lorgar, I could have ended their vileness, and Angron. How many has he butchered since I fled his axes? Rational, sensible decisions, weighing advantage and cost each time. But mistakes, all. The universe does not want us. It is unnatural that I survived.
He sighed, thinking of Marcus Valerius and the red sash that he wore so proudly.
Visions. Visions sent by the Emperor? I think not. Something else guided those that rescued me. Another hand moved my warriors to intervene at Istvan.
Powers we do not willingly serve still bend us to their will through the manipulation of others. I was not meant to survive, Istvan, and all that has befallen us since is simply a correction of that failing course. It is not coincidence that we are here, facing annihilation once more. This time, I embrace my destiny. I will let the darkness be expunged. He walked quietly to the door. Bjorn, I would speak with your leaders. Almodi Skarsen, named the Jarl of Fife, bore a huge shield, two-thirds as tall as himself, circular in shape, and bearing the blazon of the 6th Legion in black upon a yellow field. The adamantium bore dents and cuts from savage blows that had been possessed of a strength that daunted even Korax. A Jarl of Torv, Skard Oki, stood with a spear of gold in his grasp. A third Jarl, Sturgard Jorikson, of the Rout's 9th Company, bore an ornate bastard sword that was as tall as he was. You have 30 minutes, Korax told the assembled wolflords. The enemy will be upon us in half an hour. We have orbital supremacy for another 60 minutes at least. That gives you enough time to evacuate the Wolf King and whatever warriors you have remaining. Our gunships are at your disposal, as well as your own. The Space Wolves looked at the Primarch in disbelief.
Leave? Laughed Almodi Skarsen. You call into question our heritage and courage in the same breath, Ravenlord. Why would we leave when our blades are still thirsty?
To fight again, Korax said, slowly and deliberately. I am giving you the chance to save yourselves, to stand on the walls of the Imperial Palace beside the Emperor himself. I will be issuing orders to my legion. Most are going to depart. You should leave with them.
The Allfather might be glad of the company, it's true, said Ogvai, but I don't think we would be able to settle the Virgelt.
A chill ran in Korax's blood at those words.
The Virgelt, explained Bjorn, speaking softly, his gaze moving constantly back to his comatose Primarch, is a debt of blood, an unbalancing of the scales that must be set right ere we pass from this life.
This is our war, Ravenlord, said Almodi. This is the battle we started. These are the enemies we have made. We have no regrets, but you would deny us the right to settle the balance?
You want to die?
Korax looked at them all with their war-scarred armor and defiant stares.
Do you, Ravenlord?
The whispered words from Leman Russ caused them all to turn in surprise. Korax felt his stomach fall away, becoming a dark abyss that he wished would swallow him. The Wolf King raised himself on one elbow and gazed at his brother.
Did you come here to fight or to die?
What happened to you, my brother?
Korax asked. It was a few seconds before Russ replied, rising unsteadily to a sitting position.
Nothing that matters now.
He reached out, one hand to Almodi, the other to Oki. The Jarl of Fife placed the Wolf King's shield upon his arm. The other hesitated, and Sturgard stepped forward.
Would you not prefer your frostblade, my king?
Not today, said Russ.
Are you well? Asked Bjorn, his frown deep. You hate that spear.
Russ chuckled, but then his face became somber.
Do you know why? The night after the Emperor gifted me with that footlance, I had a dream. I dreamed of fire and pain and a storm that would engulf me. I woke certain that I would die with that weapon in my hand. Was that foretelling also part of the Emperor's gift? I don't know, but it seemed to me that I should not ever bear the spear out of choice.
He gestured again for Oki to give him the weapon. The Wolf Lord hesitantly handed it over. Russ looked at Korax and tried to stand from the bier. His limbs trembled and he collapsed back, a terrible incarnation of the mind willing, but the body weak.
A good death, then, said Korax.
If there is such a thing, brother.
We'll not know either way, will we?
I suppose not.
They regarded each other in silence for a minute, neither giving away their true feelings. Korax hated the part of himself that still desired for the Wolf King to take charge, to say that they would leave and return to Terra. Russ grinned toothily.
We each carry our past with us. Many have come to settle their arguments with me. I should not like to disappoint them.
He once again struggled to rise, his jarls pressing close. But the effort was too much, and the Wolf King fell back, his eyes rolling closed, his breathing ragged.
He'll give account before this is over, Korax assured the legionaries.
But the words were an empty platitude. At a nod from Amlodi, Bjorn stepped forward and took up the Wolf King's spear. There was a moment of resistance. Russ growled, his eyes flicked back and forth beneath their lids, but did not open. Then his fingers relaxed, and Bjorn prized the weapon free. He moved to pass it to Oki, but the Jarl held up his hands and stepped away.
It is a weird weapon. You can keep it, Bjorn the Fell-handed.
The wolf time is upon us, Bjorn muttered.
He ran a gauntlet up the spear and along the golden blade, the clawed fingers of his other hand gripping the shaft tightly.
We are all doomed.
In his shock, Agapito forgot all decorum. For a moment he cared nothing for rank or the legion. In that instant he could do nothing but speak his mind to the man who had been a friend for many decades.
Leave without you? You have to be insane to think we would agree to that.
If the wolves can fight to the last, my lord, so can we, added Sukuna with a little more tact. There's no reason we should be above such pointless gestures, too.
In the shadow of his Stormbird, itself dwarfed by the nearby ship, Korax prowled, as though still confined to a cell, back on Deliverance. Around them, the Space Wolves made preparations for their final stand, while squads of Raven Guard moved silently through the controlled anarchy of the mustering Sixth. The enemy were clearly visible on the other side of the valley. Sporadic shelling had begun testing out the resolve of the Loyalists to defend their fortress, while armored forces maneuvered for the final thrust.
You will leave, he said quietly, turning his black gaze upon them. I command it. Except for the raptors, replied Arendi. You want to keep the raptors. Why is that, Bran? What is special about you?
The commander said nothing, his expression as dark as a storm cloud.
This is my decision, Korax told them. He looked straight at Arendi. My will.
The commander of the newly formed Black Guard swallowed, fighting back a retort. He nodded to signal his acquiescence.
As you order, so I obey, my lord. You will take the rank of Legion Master Gerith, Korax added, eliciting more surprise from his commanders.
That is your rank, my lord,
Sukuna protested quietly.
It existed before me. You know that best of all here present.
I am honored. But perhaps it is my will.
The Primarch's sharp retort and the flash of a claw startled them all. Korax glanced at the nearby Space Wolves and dropped his voice again.
Let us not pretend any further. The raptors have no future. It is better this way. In battle with honor, as Raven Guard legionaries.
It's true, Bran muttered. Better this way. For everyone.
Agapito sighed and nodded his acknowledgement of their orders, and the others did so too. Korax looked at them in turn, his stare lingering, searching each for several seconds before he turned away and moved swiftly through the squads of the Sixth Legion. None of the commanders said anything, as each absorbed the import of what their Primarch had said.
I really thought we would rescue the Space Wolves, Sukuna admitted. I did not understand how deeply the darkness had settled in him.
You must believe me, I didn't want it this way, Bran told them. He avoided meeting Agapito's gaze, his stare directed out across the gathering sons of Fenris.
I mean for you all to be sent away. We must all die sometime, said Arendi, slapping Bran on the arm. Be sure a tidy number of traitors go first.
Aye, we will be sure.
Sukuna shook his head. The Terran glanced between Bran and Agapito and back again, then he shrugged and walked away.
I leave you to it. Brother, Agapito wanted Bran to look at him.
Brother! It fits, doesn't it?
The raptor's commander said, still watching the wolves. I plucked you all from Istvan. Now you are the ones leaving me behind. You said I would never know what it was like waiting to die there. You're right. How could I feel that?
Bran!
Agapito held out a hand, but his brother stepped away, avoiding it. He finally turned to look at Agapito.
I think about it. About that decision.
So close.
So close to thinking Valerius insane, to throwing him in the brig.
What then?
None of this. You would all be dead. I would be too. There haven't been many of us, but we've made a difference, haven't we? We've kept Horus and his filthy friends busy, right?
But there was a moment. Agapito seized hold of his brother's breastplate and pulled him closer.
What happened, happened. This isn't punishment. This isn't leveling the balance. It's just what happens. We're warriors, and this is war.
They fell silent, hands laid upon each other's pauldrons, eyes locked together. They had stood like that the night before the rebellion, knowing that it might be the last chance they had of fixing the image of each other in their thoughts. The memory was sharp for both of them still, and though they had both been changed in ways they had not imagined possible back then, for a minute they were naught but two brothers comforting each other on the eve of destiny. It was Bran that pulled away first. He forced a smile.
We conquered the galaxy, Agapito. Two skinny prison boys not worth a spit. We saw the stars and walked beside immortals. Can't complain about that. Damn right, Agapito laughed. We would have been kings in lesser company.
His laughter faded as Bran walked away, though Agapito watched him until he was lost amongst the space wolves. Korax allowed himself to drift out of the awareness of those around him, moving from the conscious thoughts of his brother's legionaries. Bran was already organizing the remnants of the raptors, and the others were marshalling the rest of the legion to orbit.
Is this channel secure? Can we be overheard?
Fully encrypted, replied Nasturi Ephrania. I am alone, as you requested, my lord.
Call me Korax, he said.
A promontory provided a convenient seat, and he lowered himself onto it to gaze out over the bustle of activity below.
It's been a long time since I used that name informally, said the controller. What has been troubling you?
You were the first face I saw, Nasturi. Alone, confused, abandoned. Yours was the first face in that cold, hard place where I woke.
She said nothing, understanding that it was not her place to speak. Not yet.
I have been thinking about that moment a lot, that instant where past and future became one. What would have happened if the guards had found me first?
I don't understand, Korax.
Could I have become something else? What is rooted in me, and what was grown by the company I kept? What if I had been raised by oppressors, and not the oppressed?
That's impossible to answer, Korax, and you know it.
So, help me. Tell me something good I've done, something objectively beneficial.
You saved my life, she said without hesitation. That moment you are talking about. A second later, you killed the guard that had been my tormentor for as long as I could remember. You gave me his head as a gift. You never knew what that meant to me. I was so close to ending it. Even at that age, I was broken, without hope. I saw what they did to the others, what waited for me. Worse, if that guard had lived, I would have died soon enough by his hand or mine.
You never spoke of this before.
I didn't have to. I saw you rip off the head of the man that had terrified and abused me since I was born. And then I knew that everything would be all right. I knew that we could fight back, that there was justice, and it was clad in white skin and black hair.
Korax suddenly remembered their meeting with such clarity that it hurt as much as the moment when it had happened, her pain writ so large on her infant features as the guard dragged her away by the hair. He had never seen it before in this way, but he could see it now, the absolute and personal terror she had felt in the grip of that man. And her laugh, a reaction of sheer relief and delight when the young Primarch had torn off the guard's head. His eyes searched the mustering army,
and settled upon Bjorn, who stood alone, watching the approaching enemy, the spear of Russ driven into the hard ground by his side. "We named you Corvus Corax for a reason," she told him. "The Savior."
"Thank you," he said, and cut the voxlink.
The drop harness was uncomfortable. It bit into Hef's flesh in strange places, not designed for his unnatural frame. He bore the discomfort in silence, holding back the growls that wanted to break free. The pod was dark, almost pitch black. He could hear the reverberations through the hull of the Avenger, the thrum of void shield generators bursting into life, the steady rattle of macro cannons on the gun decks, the hiss of the massive dorsal turret turntable carrying the bombardment cannon, and the thud of its firing. The breathing of his companions was a mix of steady and labored. Some of the raptors hissed, panted, and coughed, their breath coming from distorted throats and jaws, whistling from bestial nostrils. Hef was no stranger to the wait before battle. His life had been filled with such since his induction into the Legion. Today he felt something else, something aside from the usual tension, the welcome anticipation. He felt shame. Nothing had been said, no accusation made, but he knew his actions had been responsible for the Primarch's change in attitude to the raptors. The final act of condemnation had come when Bran, stony-faced, had brought together the company and rearranged them into roughs and smooths. All of the roughs were gathered into a few squads to be deployed together from the drop pods when called upon. Hef could well guess what manner of attack awaited him and his deformed brothers. Corax had finally tired of the lie, of hiding his secret abominations. This would be their last battle, no matter what the outcome. They had heard what had happened to the Therian cohort before the jump to Yarrant, dispatched to a war that nobody could win. Hef did not know what the Imperial Army soldiers had done to displease the Primarch, but it could not have been anything worse than what Hef had done to Woundweaver and his watch pack. Thoughts of the Space Wolf's death brought a fresh surge of guilt. Hef whined. He could not stop himself. It crawled from his throat unbidden, sharp, and loud in the confines of the drop pod. He hated himself more each moment. He hated what he was becoming, and the weakness within him that made him succumb to his own darkness. He was slipping away, and the worst part was that he knew it. There would be a moment, a line crossed, when it would no longer matter, but until then, he felt every second of his slide into feral insanity. The flesh could be tortured no more, but his mind plunged into fresh depths.
"Finish,"
he growled, wrapping his clawed hands around the restraints. His limbs trembled, filled with frustration and pain, desiring release.
"Finish."
To stand as one warrior against the force of the traitors that surged across the valley was to be a pebble cast against the incoming tide, but together the Raven Guard and Space Wolves faced the threat. Bran saw Corax emerge from the stronghold with Bjorn and the Wolf Lords. There was no sign of Leman Russ, and his mood sank a little. Another Primarch on the field of battle would have eased his thoughts. The Sons of Russ made much ceremony of their preparations and daubed their armor and faces with bloody handprints. There were chanting and howls, guttural oaths, and the brandishing of weapons as they swore themselves to saga-worthy deeds. Bran saw wildness in the eyes of many, an animal glare he recognized all too well from the most devolved of the raptors. The followers of the Warmaster had spent the hours well, taking stock of the situation and planning accordingly. There was no hunt for the remnants of a legion and their incapacitated leader. This was all-out war to exterminate the warriors of Corax and Russ. They advanced fast, sparing only the briefest time for a preliminary bombardment, trusting to proximity to protect them against attack from orbit. It was a strange feeling for Bran to finally have an inkling of what it must have been like on Istvan, waiting for the inevitable blow to fall. There had been little by way of report from the battle fleet, but he had to believe that the greater number of the traitor vessels would soon be returning to Yarrant and would destroy the Raven Guard's last lifeline within hours. He had been present when Corax had ordered the remaining Natolian and Therian ship commanders to die fighting, to rain down death upon the traitors for as long as possible, and then to turn their guns against the enemy ships. The clamor of the space wolves, of clarions and war shouts, swelled up around him. He found himself strangely calm, accepting of this fate. Commander Bran Nev readied his weapons. The raptors fell in behind the Primarch, as did the wolves, as though they had adopted the Raven Lord in the absence of their own commander. The Fenrisian companies advanced at speed, quickly outpacing the Raven Guard contingents, moving to meet the wave of legionaries that poured across the hillsides. The 6th Legion's veterans took up overwatch positions and opened fire with heavier weapons, gunning down the enemy warriors that tried to outflank them. Russ's Wolfguard and several squads kept closer to Korax, guarding his back, even as shells and missiles fell amongst them once more. The crash of the hearthship guns was lost in the tumult of gunship engines and battle cannons and the incessant snarl of thousands of bolters. Movement above drew Korax's eye. Gunships that bore the livery and markings of a different master to the warriors marching from the east. Not the blue of the Alpha Legion, but the dark warplate of the 16th Legion's first company elite. So, the Sons of Horus were in force here too. How portentous that renaming now seemed. In a single act, the dedication of the Lunar Wolves to the Warmaster seemed in hindsight to be the culmination of all the ambition and selfishness that had manifested in Horus. Korax watched as the many gunships disgorged squads of warriors wearing heavy Terminator armor, supported by at least a dozen dreadnoughts. For whatever reason, Horus had sent his very best to ensure the destruction of his brother, Russ. The Raven Lord turned his attention back to the onrushing legions. When the traitors were almost upon the line of space wolves, Korax took to the air and ascended in a spiral. And then he disappeared. It had been too long. The Avenger had fallen quiet, only the constant throb of reactors and void shields to disturb the calm. Hef reached out a claw and flicked the communicator pickup into life.
Command is pod 27. No launch is malfunction, perhaps.
Pod 27, no malfunction, no launch order given. Lord Korax has direct authorization for Raptor launch protocols.
Lord Korax?
That is correct, Lieutenant Hef. We are awaiting the Primarch's direct order.
Understood.
Hef deactivated the vox. He could feel the eyes of the others upon him, but did not look up to meet their gaze. Lord Korax had taken command of the Raptors away from Bran?
It's just us, Hef, said Devor from the harness to his left. Just the roughs. The smooths went down with Bran, I'm sure.
What is he waiting for?
Asked Sanad, his voice a hoarse whisper, the light of the drop pod casting a ruddy sheen over his milky white flesh.
We can fight!
Hef knew why. He owed it to the others to explain.
Lars, fight for us!
His nostrils flared at the thought.
Primarch, send us into last battle only. Not want to show us unless nobody survive as witness.
Cloaked by his unnatural power, Korax scythed into the unsuspecting World Eaters. Claws and wings slashed bloody ruin through the advancing ranks, leaving gouges of dismembered legionaries in his wake. He turned, rose, and fell again, decapitating a score of foes with his next pass. Confusion rippled out through the army as this unseen blade sliced through its warriors. Focused on nothing but the death of his enemies, Korax swooped and ascended and dived again, each time carving ragged furrows through the companies of armored warriors ascending the hill. Blasts from his pistol burst through the thickest plate, making short work of those that tried to retreat from the unseen apparition, churning through their squad brothers. Though 100 fell to his attacks in the first minutes, 10 times that number surged onwards, unheeding of the terror assailing their companions, intent only on bringing the final humiliation to the Wolf King and his sons. Korax watched Bjorn and the wolves meet the oncoming horde with their own charge. The spear he had taken from the hand of his unconscious lord was a glittering thunderbolt that flashed and burned, and each strike of its gilded head left half a dozen dead legionaries scattered over the scorched ground. The wolves of Fenris moved ceaselessly through the hail of autocannon and bolter fire, always one step away from the aim of their enemies, their plate sparking with the few rounds that found their mark. A world-eater's terminator broke from the melee and rushed Bjorn, twin chain fists splashing the blood of the Wolf King's sons. Bjorn thrust out with his own clawed gauntlet, its blades piercing the warrior's thick breastplate with apparent ease. Korax killed a score more of the legionaries and worked his way back to his brother's elite guard. Like a bloody whirlwind, he wove and turned, hacking apart those traitors that briefly eluded the Wolf Guard's murderous swings and thrusts. The world-eaters did not relent, their implants forcing them into assault after assault that left them torn asunder by the wrath of the Raven Lord and his unlikely allies, their armor and flesh scattered as though tossed into the whirring blades of a gyroplane. Around them, the raptors and space wolves formed into a tight defensive cordon, assailed on all sides by the combined fury of the Thousand Suns and Alpha Legion, alongside even more of the world-eaters. Only the Sons of Horus had yet to commit. Hef waited, listened to his breath coming in gasps. The order had to come now. It would take several minutes for the drop to complete. Surely the Primarch would call for his raptors soon. He activated the vox again.
Command is Hef again. Boost secure channel to Lieutenant Naroka.
Understood, Lieutenant. There was a slight pause. Your signal is being relayed now.
Naroka?
Hef! A grunt and burst of breath indicated that the other lieutenant was engaged in some strenuous physical activity.
I'm in the middle of a bloody fight here. Where are you? On drop pod waiting.
A series of snarls and curses punctuated the next few seconds.
Why haven't you dropped? Waiting for Lord Korax's personal command. Well, we could certainly use you here, my friend. This battle zone is getting hotter than the furnace rooms. What is the Primarch waiting for?
Hef did not want to answer that question, but there was something he had to say.
I was wrong about Wound Weaver. We not meant to know fear, but I could not let space wolves attack Lord Korax because of us. I am sorry.
There was no reply.
Naroka, are you there?
Only Static answered. Landing next to the grizzled wolf lord Sturgard Yorickson, Korax felt chain axes and bolts biting into his armor from all sides, but he paid them no heed. Every flick of a wing, every twist of a claw, ended another traitor life. Each second brought him closer to removing the taint within himself, the corruption that was inherent in his creation and that of his brothers. It was time to end it. Time to pay the price in blood. He opened a vox channel to the Avenger.
Prime the pod cascade for drop assault. On my next signal.
Affirmative, my lord. Preparing for final wave drop.
Ephrania's voice cracked as she replied, overcome by the moment.
Goodbye, Korax.
He said nothing, plunging his claws into the gut of another legionary. So engrossed was he in the carnage that he did not hear the whine of the incoming shells and the hiss of missile jets until it was too late. By the time Sturgard heard it too, he barely had time to turn. The first detonation parted the Primarch and the Space Wolves, exploding right between them. The second hit Korax square in the chest as he leapt into the air, knocking him back to the ground. The third and fourth, and more, became a deafening, all-consuming storm of noise and fire that battered his body and ripped apart the ground around him. He could feel his armor breaking under the pounding, his flesh splitting and burning, bones trembling under the ferocity of the artillery attack. Through the flashes, he could just about see Bjorn struggle to his feet, spear lifted in defiance, even as a frag missile exploded across his pauldron and showered him with white-hot metal shards. He fell amongst the broken bodies of a trio of Wolfguard, the spear fallen from his grasp. Korax's thoughts turned to the Wolf King lying broken and helpless in the last fortress of the Space Wolves. Helpless for the first time in his unnatural life. The Raven Lord had never turned from a single soul who had needed his aid. Would he really let his enemies murder the wounded Primarch? Did his own desire for penance have such a grip on him? From the height of the mountain flew a banner that he knew well. The standard of the War Master's reviled first captain, Abaddon. Though Horus himself had not come to Yarrant, he had dispatched his right hand to oversee the final destruction of the Sixth. The image of that banner was burned into Korax's mind, and one like it, but far grander, that had flown above the hills over the Urgal Depression. The all-seeing icon of the War Master, the Eye of Horus. "I am the Emperor's vigilance," it had once read, "and the Eye of Terror." Such arrogance, such selfishness to turn the Imperium upon itself at the greatest moment in its history. The vanity of it all appalled Korax, filled him with a loathing greater than that he had held for all his jailers combined. He rolled to his hands and knees, his wings a crippled mass of metal and wire trailing from his back. He slashed free of their entangling burden and stood up, swaying to one side as a rocket seared past his cheek and exploded amongst the circle of corpses around him and his brother's surviving lieutenants. Horus still lived, still threatened terror, still threatened the Emperor himself.
"What am I doing?"
Korax whispered. This was the price. This was his Wehrgeld. To survive, to fight, to feel the pain each and every day. It was not his right to choose death. It was not his place to absolve himself of his sins. Only one being could do that, and he resided upon the throne world. A fresh salvo of rockets and shells shrieked down towards them. Korax snatched up Russ's spear and threw his other arm around Bjorn. Though he no longer had wings to soar, Korax could still fly. He activated his jump pack. Its blast hurled them free of the barrage and carried them 50 meters from the impact. Fire and smoke swamped them as they crashed into the unyielding rock of the mountain. Korax rolled to his feet as Bjorn tried to fight from his grasp. The Space Wolf leapt up, spear seized from the ground, and for a moment the Raven Guard Primarch thought his brother's fell-handed warrior would strike him.
"This is not a good death," Korax snapped, stepping back. "This is not how we leave. We don't get to choose." "You are not my father to command me," cried Bjorn, stepping back. "There is a war to fight, and if we win, when we win, we must remember who it was that brought this upon us. Not mortals, not humans, but ourselves. This was a war between the legions. You, me, and all of my brothers have the potential for this heresy within us. It's a little late to change our minds, don't you think?" Bjorn pointed with a spear at the battle that still raged around them. "Surrounded, outgunned, our ships about to be burned in orbit." Korax activated the vox. "Commander Bran."
"Yes, my lord."
"Begin the shadow's parting."
The commander exhaled with obvious relief.
"Thank you, my lord."
10 seconds later, the first strikes from orbit lanced down through the gloom, just 100 meters from the shattered cordon lines. Orbs of plasma followed, and, through the fresh fury of orbital attack, the silhouettes of gunships descended, their pinpoint strikes carving into the foe. The Space Wolf shook his head in disbelief.
"Don't worry, Bjorn!"
Korax roared, firing his pistol wildly at the traitor ranks, the relief of the moment more than he could contain without pained laughter.
"We've done this before!"
Hef's jaw ached, and he realized he had been worrying at the harness without thought, gnawing the padded bracing across his armor. He craved an end, blissful oblivion. The lighting in the pod brightened, the ruddy gleam of the drop replaced by the ambient blue of the regular illumination strip. The address system crackled into life, and Hef recognized Bran's voice, though he found it difficult to picture the commander. Only vague impressions and memories surfaced through the cloud that fogged his thoughts.
"All stations, the evacuation has begun. There will be no drop. I repeat, the Raptors will not drop."
Some of the others laughed. Hef slammed his fist into the harness release and dropped to the deck, falling onto all fours. He placed his forehead against the cold metal, his claws scraped on the steel, and he started to weep. Sitting back on his haunches, he let out his despair in a long, tormented cry. Ogvi Ogvi Helmshrot, the most senior surviving Jarl, sat opposite Korax in the compartment of the Stormbird, staring at the Primarch. They said nothing for some time. The madness of the evacuation had left everyone preoccupied and exhausted. There was a cut above Ogvi's right eye, and Korax could still see slivers of ceramite in the wound.
"You should see an apothecary," he said.
"What next?"
Ogvi asked, ignoring the Primarch's concern.
"You can count the number of great companies we have left on one hand. I figure you know exactly what that's like. What do we do? Where do we fight now if the Wolf King does not awaken?"
"That's up to you. I am not my brother."
"And you? What of the Raven Guard?"
Korax let out a long, weary breath. This all felt so hatefully familiar.
"We'll go where we're comfortable, where we can do the most damage to the War Master's forces as they march for Terra. We'll go back into the shadows."